this is also not a value judgment in terms of who goes first, in terms of saving lives. Who goes first? That the man goes first. It means to say like this. It simply means that, and this is halacha, and Donnie Myers asked me to expound on this a little bit, and I'll talk about it in a little while. But it means, it's simply a matter of halacha. It means that Klal Yisrael accepted upon themselves, where there are two people, and you have to save one. So there's no method of determining whose life you should save. It's ridiculous to even try to come up with it with a formula for such a thing. There's no such thing. There's no idea like this. In Western society's idea, one of the first is absurd also. A human life can't be measured in those terms. Person courtesies or whatever is something else. It has nothing to do with a person's life. A person's life is an invaluable object, and you can't determine whose life is more valuable, and you can't determine whether you should save a man or a woman first. Impossible to determine. What it means is that Klal Yisrael accepted in such a situation that that the order of saving lives should reflect
the priority of mitzvos.
It means the order of saving, there's no way to determine, so Klal Yisrael accepted the fact that the order of the saving of the life
should reflect the high priority we place on mitzvahs. Since there is no way to make a determination, so the way it was decided was in a manner which reflects the commitment that Klal Yisrael has to mitzvahs and its love of mitzvahs. But in no way does it indicate that one person's life is more valuable than another. There's no way to make such a judgment. It is a halachic phenomena, which is based upon the concept of commitment to mitzvos, to reflect that ideal. Okay.
The halacha used the commitment to mitzvahs as a criterion. Because there's no criterion. In reality, there's no criterion. It's unfortunate one person is going to die. What are you going to do? You have to recognize reality. That's the situation. You can't save them both. So what are you going to do? So the halacha says that is the criterion. I'm not saying it has not. With regard to who is ola l'gdula. Ola l'gdula means a person that's prominent. I mean, that has nothing to do. That's completely determined by the individual. As I mentioned, Dvara, the one that has the knowledge of Torah, is the one that's the highest person. And if Dvara Nevi'ah has the highest knowledge of Torah, so he shofetes es Yisrael ba'isahik. That's what I mean. That she is the highest on the highest level, and the Sanhedrin, the whole Sanhedrin, is subordinated to her because she has the knowledge. That is the ultimate criterion in terms of who. Who? What is Klal Yisrael really? Klal Yisrael, the system of Klal Yisrael, is really, it's not, is it a democracy? No, it's not a democracy. Is it an aristocracy? No, it's not an aristocracy. But what is it? It's an intellectual aristocracy. It's a democratic aristocracy. Because what it is, what it states is that anyone that has the chokhmah is the one that is in the forefront. They are the one that has the highest position. But that has to do with knowledge. It's based upon knowledge. That's the system of Yadis. If there's anything, what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says the halacha with regard to Kedima, the end of the Mishnah, the end of the same Mishnah. Halacha with regard to personal Kedima. Okay? With regard to Kedima, I'll give you an example. The end of the Mishnah is like this. It says when it comes to Kedima, who goes first in certain, who you machabit first, who you honor first? That's an interesting thing. The Mishnah says, well, the Rebbe is a different thing, but I'm talking in general. Okay? In general. So you have a halacha before you come to that, but a mamzer, if you have all things being equal, it depends, there are a lot of permutations there, I'm not going to go into all of them, but everything being equal, a mamzer comes before a ger. Interesting halacha. Before ger. Why? Why is the mamzer coming before ger? Because he has Kedushas Yisrael and the ger didn't. So what does this mean? You know, the worst thing in the Torah, one of the worst affairs a person can do is to be Mitzayer a ger. To make him feel bad that he's a ger. And today it's a style that people try to hide the fact that they're gay. That's why you have, that's why Rabbanim have problems writing up ksubas, because nobody wants to say they're gay. They don't want to say they're ben from Avinu. They don't want to say that because they consider it a bezayin. This is a new kind of situation. We never had this before. And yichus is not so. Yichus is part of the halachic system. There's nothing to be ashamed about. Doesn't mean that a person is a ger, that he's inferior. But why is it nevertheless a, how can we do this? How can we be mechabed the mamza before the ger, because the ger has less kedusha? There wasn't a russo the kedusha. The answer is because the system is not based upon a personal, not based upon a personal evaluation. And you see, as a matter of fact, Mamza Talmud Chacham, as everybody knows, is called Kohen Gadol Lamaretz. Okay? Kohen Gadol Lamaretz. By the way, Kohen Gadol was, when it says Kohen Gadol Lamaretz, just want to mention it. Well, how could Kohen Gadol be an Amaretz? Not supposed to choose a Kohen Gadol Lamaretz. The answer is because in the second bias, there was corruption in it. Putting Kohen Gadol Lamaretz. Yeah, right. Yeah, political reasons. But in the bias region, there's no such thing. But anyways, so there, that's where the personal comes into play. But if there is no superiority, there is no superiority in terms of chachma, in terms of Talmud chacham, so then we reflect, we give kavod. It's an objective concept. You have to perceive the concept. It means we give kavod to people in accordance with something that reflects the most valuable thing that we have, which is Kedusha Satara. So therefore, since a person in the system, it was Harasa B'Kedusha, so this reflects a closer relationship intrinsically to the system than a ger. It's not, it has nothing to do with personally with a ger. It has to do with the concept of showing our commitment to the system of the Torah. So therefore, if a person reflects to a greater degree their involvement in the system because they were born part of the system. So it's not really the mamzen that we're being mechaber. We're being mechaber is the Torah. That's what being mechaber. That's the idea. Not being mechaber the person. We're working at the kibudim based upon kavod haTorah. So anyone closer to the Torah, we respect first. It's really kavod haTorah. And we aren't hurting the ger. If it was a personal thing, you couldn't do it. You're not allowed to wear things from a tzair ger. But it's not a tzar for the ger, because the ger himself loves Torah, and the ger himself wants to see that we should do something that reflects our allegiance and our respect and our commitment to Torah. You understand what I mean? It's not a degradation, it's not a personal thing. The problem with today's society is that if somebody gets an honor, it's immediately a personal thing. It's not a personal thing. The kavod is a kavod of Torah. So Rabban Kutler, when he walked into the yeshiva, he always used to carry a sefer. He says, they're standing up for the sefer, not standing up for me. So the halacha of a kavod harav is also not a personal thing. Kavod harav is, it's personal. Whether it's his Torah, it doesn't mean really whether it's his. It means to say whether the system was established in a way that he has a right to tell you what to do with it. But it's still not his. It's still kavod haTorah. It's kavod haKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately that we're being mechaved. So people in today's society are so tied to the physical and to the tangible that they can't even perceive an idea like this, where it's an objective concept that we're being mechabed, which these people are only players in reflecting an idea, and it's not the people that we're being mechabed. They can't understand such an idea because they're so tied to the instinctual that immediately everything is taken personally. They can only understand the personal. They can't understand an objective kind of a keyboard. The idea of an objective keyboard is alien to their minds because their desires for cover is so powerful that that's the only kind of cover they see. Over here, we aren't hurting the ger. The ger himself is happy. He loves Torah. He wants to reflect the idea that this person is intrinsically part of the system, so it reflects kavod haTorah. Reflects kavod haTorah. It's not the person. Okay. Yes. And this is something which my wife mentioned to me. It's correct that there's a lot more women that were involved in Torah than we realized. You have to understand, because of the Hatznei Alechas Malakecha that women reflected, they weren't so quick to go around demonstrating their lumbus. But there were a lot more. I mean, many people don't even know about the... Alright, Rashi's daughters are famous, but the mother, the Drisha, and others, to be sure, there were many, many more that just didn't place themselves in the foreground. How many people know about the Rav's mother? And and people don't know these things because these women weren't interested in parading their knowledge. They weren't interested in parading their knowledge. Doesn't mean they didn't have the knowledge. Okay, so you have to realize that that because of their midas atznius, they weren't eager to show off and to demonstrate. A lot of people didn't know about them, but it was enough for them that God knew about them, and that was it. So there, the question of going first is the question of if it's not an infringement on the atznei lechas. Okay, but anyways, I don't mean that men have more of a commitment. There's no such thing as more of a commitment. We have the same commitment. Men and women have the exact same commitment. It means to say, reflects the fact that that the man is endowed with more mitzvahs. It reflects the love of mitzvahs. That's what it reflects. Not because of any kind of superiority. It's not a superiority. It's in terms of halacha, there's no difference between a kedusha of a man and a kedusha of a woman. I tell you, an eved is different. An eved only has mitzvahs kedusha. So an eved really, and an eved's geirus is a different kind of a geirus. He partakes of kedusha shel partially. Unless he's free, then it's consummated. But an isha, there's no difference between the kedusha of an isha and the kedusha of an ish. There's no difference like that. But the only difference is in terms of the mitzvahs, is a demonstration of chibur of mitzvahs. Of chibur, you have no other way to do it. There's no other way to make a choice. Okay? So, yeah. The Gemara says a category of gerim are kushim gerim lisorka sapachas. That most gerim are not magaya, the Gemara says, for the proper reason. It's a fact. It's a fact. Not magaya for the proper reason. But that's why Chazal were very careful when gerim came to try to interrogate them. And in spite of that, it didn't work out. Very few. But a particular ger that's magaya for the proper reason, the ger tzedek, highest level. Yerushim Malachi says he's bigger than we are because he did it voluntarily and we did it out of coercion. But in terms of that's something else. That's a personal thing. But in terms of God's will, there's the personal, that's a personal attribute. Something else. But in terms of God's will, God endowed Klal Yisrael with Kedusha. He didn't endow others with Kedusha. So the fact that he endowed Klal Yisrael with Kedusha intrinsically reflects an idea. Reflects a concept that is demonstrated through the cover. An objective concept. Okay? Yeah, standing up would be for Dvorah, no question about it. Gemara says, Chacham kodem l'malach Yisrael. Chacham comes before, a wise person comes before the king. Because Chacham shemeis ein lon kiyatzbo. If a wise person dies, there is no replacement for him. Melech Yisrael shemeis. But a king that dies, kod Yisrael l'rum l'malach. Anybody can be a king. Okay. That reflects the true value system of Yadas. And in that framework, Anisha comes first. Anisha's Chacham Moshe will definitely come first. There's no question about it. So the reason why Nashma Patura submits to Seisha's mind grandma is Exeris HaKasav. Mestavra is the reason is because of the fact that their role in so far as establishing the Klal Yisrael is such that they can't be burdened with a technical obligation. Okay, they can't because of their situation. And even if you'll tell me that, let's say when a person gets older, so they don't have the responsibilities that they had in establishing the family and things like that. But that's not the way halacha works. See, that's what I mentioned. That's what Donnie was asking. See, the halachic system has to work in a certain way. And only a person who really studies halacha can know exactly what type of things make sense halachically. It takes years of study for a person to have a sense of how halacha is structured. Halacha is structured in a very logical and in a way that has a certain abstract beauty to it. It has to have an abstract beauty to it. Beauty in halacha is a necessary component of the halachic system. That's why the Gemara says on the pasuk Vash v'cholov tachas l'shoneich, the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, that honey and milk is under your tongue. The Gemara says that refers to Divrei Torah. If a person, the Gemara says, if a person has an idea in Torah, and it's not sweet, like honey and milk, he shouldn't say it. He shouldn't say it because that's not the proper, that's the correct idea. So he shouldn't say the idea publicly. It should be tacha. Then it should be under his tongue. He shouldn't say it. But if it's good, he should. That's the Gemara Darshan's possible. But at any rate, the idea, the concept of halacha, that a halacha has a certain intellectual aesthetics is not just a drasha. It means that God constructed the halacha in that way. that the halacha must have a certain intellectual aesthetics, a certain beauty to it, and a certain faultless logic to the in the system. And these are the considerations that God used to determine what the ultimate halachic structure should be. Now that, since that is the case, halacha cannot reflect philosophy. Halacha cannot reflect philosophy. Because of that. That's one reason it can't. Because in what halacha does, of course, ultimately there's a reason behind halacha. That's why if you read the reasons in the Rambam's Moreh Nevuchim, so you'll see that you won't understand them. Like, what kind of a reason is there? You find many details in the halacha that go against the reason. But the Rambam makes it clear that you can't philosophize details in halacha. Because the reason, he doesn't say why, but the reason is obvious to any person that knows halacha, that the halachic system is constructed in a way that it must satisfy a certain sense of beauty that a person has, an appreciation of the system, on a logical, abstract basis, not because of the reason. So halacha starts off with a reason. There's a reason.
But once the halacha starts, then it works in its own system. It's a unique system, a very unique kind of subject, and it has its own criteria. It has a certain logic and a certain beauty in its structure. And since that's the case, in many it goes away from the reason, which was the starting point for the halacha. Halacha cannot go hand in hand in every step with reason, with philosophy, because it's a special kind of a subject, and once you get involved in the subject demands a certain beauty and a certain structure and a certain logic because of the nature of the subject itself. And since that's the case, the reason for the halacha, which is related to the halacha at its inception, the halacha becomes unrelated to. And halacha travels away in its own sphere. Of course, the reason that this is so is because part of perfection in man is that man should appreciate the beauty and the chachma, the wisdom, the logic of the halachic system. This itself is the greatest perfection for man, and this is part of God's system in developing the unique subject matter of halacha, which is different than any other kind of a subject. And just like a person needs a sense for mathematics and for physics, a person needs a very special sense for halacha. Since it is a separate subject, it must be separate, intrinsically, from philosophy. It only has certain points of contact with philosophy.
Example, okay, that's a good example. L'man yedu d'orasechem, okay? So l'man yedu d'orasechem yikiba sukkah s'shaftis b'nei Yisrael. So what's the purpose of sukkah? Is that people should know that when God took us out of Mitzrayim, so he made sukkahs for us in the desert. Right? Okay. So that's the reason for the mitzvah. So everybody should know. That's why the Gemara says that a sukkah that's higher than 20 amos is no good, because a person doesn't know that he's sitting in he's sitting under the schach. The main part of the sukkah is the schach. He doesn't know he's sitting under the schach. Okay? So that's your question. That if that's the case, l'man yedu d'orasechem, so let's say a person is sitting in the sukkah and he's sitting all alone, he's out in the middle of the desert, nobody ever saw a sukkah. And is he mekayim the mitzvah? L'man yedu d'orasechem? I'll give you a further case. Let's say the person himself didn't know he was in the sukkah. And I held mitzvah saying tzvichas kavanah. So will he be yotzei? Aye, l'man yedu. He doesn't know himself, no, he's there. He'll be yotzei the mitzvah. So even though he doesn't know, because there's a position that maintains, and that position no one knows whether it's right or wrong. To this day, it's never been resolved. Whether a person in doing a mitzvah has to be cognizant of the mitzvah. There's a perfect example, by the way. How is it possible to say that a person can do a mitzvah not being aware of the mitzvah? A person takes a shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and he doesn't know that it's Rosh Hashanah. He doesn't know it's Rosh Hashanah, and he blows the tkiyas. Okay, and he's yotze. How can it be yotze? And he doesn't even know he's doing a mitzvah. He doesn't know it's Rosh Hashanah. Okay, or it's tekel ashir. He's blowing it. It is Rosh Hashanah, and he's blowing it to call his dog. But that just so happens the way he blows it comes at the exact right notes. So halacha is yotze the mitzvah. How is such a thing possible? Does that make sense philosophically? Of course it doesn't make any sense philosophically. But the fact is, No, practically. The reason is it doesn't make any sense from a philosophical point of view. From a philosophical point of view, it doesn't make any sense. You know, it's funny. To me, if I was investigating the Torah, this problem would be more of a problem to me than the problems of Mamzerim and other things. This doesn't make any sense altogether. I mean, all right, Mamzer, you say, is a problem. But this is doesn't make any sense. I don't see people worrying about this halacha over here. The reason is, as I said before, it's not motivated by a sincere desire for knowledge. It's motivated by personal considerations. But the truth of the matter is that this example I'm giving you right now, which is a bigger problem, shows you, proves the point. The point is that halacha and philosophy are two separate worlds. If philosophy were halacha, you could never have such a thing like this. That a person should be out to hear shofar, he's blowing a shofar to call his dog. What kind of, it doesn't make any sense altogether. It's the most absurd thing in the world. But a person that knows halacha knows that the definition of a mitzvah, the definition of what a mitzvah is, requires a rigid, definitive kind of statement. You can't just say, what is a mitzvah halachically? You can't say a mitzvah is something that brings you closer to God. That's not a halachic definition. That's a philosophical definition. What a mitzvah is, what in the structure of this action defines it as a mitzvah? And from a theoretical, logical standpoint, it is very plausible. And many Yerushalayim hold this way. Mitzvah Yisrael Zgavah. It makes perfect sense to say that the mere fact that the action that you did is in perfect conformity, which the action of the Torah describes, that itself renders it a mitzvah. It's a logical concept. It has nothing to do with reasons. Okay? It's not dealing with whether this guy's Tchiyas Shofar is going to bring him into Gan Eden or not. It's not dealing with that. You see? It's dealing with, technically, is it a Kiyama mitzvah? And if he did it that way, he can't blow again. That's it. He can't blow again because halachically he fulfilled his requirement. Because in the fact that he did an action which is in conformity with the prescription of the Torah, that itself renders the action an action of mitzvah. Not because the person, that has nothing to do with the person's intention. It's an objective phenomenon in reality. It's a halachic phenomenon. It's a halachic reality. So the halacha doesn't cater to philosophy. Yeah, it's true. God gave the mitzvah of sukkah because people should know if the Jews were not in the midbar, so that we wouldn't have the mitzvah of sukkah. That's what it means. But once the mitzvah of sukkah was given, it doesn't matter if the person is in Arizona in the middle of the desert and no one sees him. He's still mekayim the mitzvah. There's only one thing the Gemara says. The Gemara says that l'man yeda derasechem has halachic validity as well. It means in the structure of the sukkah can't be structured in a way that when the person sits in the sukkah, he's unrelated to the schach. It's a purely halachic concept. It's a purely halachic concept. It has nothing to do with the philosophy anymore. It's a halacha in the very structure of the sukkah. Not because the person will be reminded. As I said, if the person doesn't know the sukkah, it's still a kind of mitzvah. So you see, halacha itself has nothing to do, the concept of halacha. See,
halacha is a unique concept given to us by God. It's not something any human being would create of their own mind.
No other religion has the concept of, has such an idea. It's halacha given to us by God's chachma. The greatest person would never come up with this idea. The most brilliant mind would never come up with the idea of halacha. Halacha, the only reason we have it is because people that came up with reasons, with philosophies and with ideas of how to perfect people, even big philosophers, I'm talking about Goyim where their ideas are, you know, Ovdei Avodah Zarah, where their ideas are basically just projections of their emotions. I'm speaking about even Chachamim, even Plato. The ideas that they come up with are always related to the philosophy. It can't, because a person can't manufacture anything beyond that. It's related to the philosophy. He wants to accomplish a goal, so he does something which is in line with that goal. The concept of halacha was given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No person could ever have invented the idea of halacha. It's a system, a purely logical system of abstractions that's infinite in depth, and that no person could have ever created and would ever create, you see. It's a separate system. It's a science. It's a separate kind of a science. It works in a totally different way, completely removed from any kind of philosophy. It's a science in its own right. And that's why you can't deduce philosophical conclusions from halacha. You have to know the halacha. The Rambam can because he knows the halacha. That's why the whole idea of people philosophizing yadas throughout the past centuries is a complete absurdity. It's a complete absurdity. I was speaking to somebody who was telling me they enjoyed Mendelssohn's philosophy of Yadis and this one's philosophy of Yadis. So I just told them one simple thing. It's very nice to philosophize a system. But how can you philosophize a system when you don't know the very essence and core of the system? No one's going to deny that halacha permeates every aspect of Judaism from the time immemorial till now. So how could somebody philosophize a system if they don't know what halacha is? They don't even know what it is. They have no notion of what halacha is. And they're philosophizing a system which is the whole form of the system is from halacha. Every aspect of the system is from halacha. The commitment that the people had to the religion is all halacha. The way they davened is halacha. The way they read the Torah is halacha. Everything they did was halacha. And he's philosophizing the system, doesn't know what it is. It's absurd. It just doesn't make any sense. All these philosophies are baseless. They're based on nothing. The only one that can philosophize a system is a person. That's the great Talmud Chacham. You have to have certain credentials. You have to know what you're talking about. Can you philosophize about something you don't know what it is? But in the world, this question is not a question. A historian who knows nothing about the halacha doesn't know what it is. He can come along and he's going to philosophize Judaism. Judaism is this, it's that, this idea, that idea, all kinds of concepts of time, space, this. Ishgeshteigen, Ishgeflagen, they don't know what they're talking about. They don't understand what the whole system, the essence of the system is about. The Rav can philosophize Yadus because he knows halacha. You can derive a philosophy from halacha if you know halacha and you know the points of contact between philosophy and halacha, between halacha and philosophy. You have to, but that means you have to know the system of Allah. Without knowing the system of Allah, you just haven't got a chance. Okay. Yeah, there is. You sure there is a philosophy? The Rambam, Hirsch. Yeah. Right. With the bonus, there are people that have been able to do it. But the point is, the only ones that are qualified to do it. Whether I'm not even talking about being correct. I'm talking about being qualified. The only ones that are qualified to do it are people that have knowledge of Allah. If you have knowledge of Allah, it's just a waste of nonsense. That's what it is. You're not talking about a system, you don't know what it is. Okay? There is a philosophy. There is a philosophy of halacha. The philosophy of halacha can only be known to a person. See, halacha and philosophy, the best way to put it is like this. Halacha and philosophy have points of contact. That's what it means. They have points of contact. But the halacha does not run along philosophical roots. Doesn't run along philosophical lines, but there are points of contact between halacha and philosophy. So in order to know the philosophy of Yadus, you have to know halacha so well that you know where these points of contact are. If you know where those points of contact are, then you can philosophize. If you don't know halacha, you can't. Okay? The Rambam was able to do it. Although I'll tell you, honestly, I don't recommend for anybody to read the Rambam's Time and Mitzvahs, because I don't think anyone will have any idea what he's talking about. Yes? Yeah, exactly. Same thing with tzitzis. And yet there's no halacha that says you have to look at your tzitzis. You have to see your tzitzis. The kind of mitzvah without seeing it. The philosophy is not the halacha. The only thing is, it says the reason why God gave the mitzvah, the benefit is that since people wear tzitzis in general, they'll know about tzitzis and it will cause them to run. But that's not a halachic thing. That has nothing to do with halacha. There's no halacha. You have to look at your tzitzis. The only reason you have to be aware of tefillin is not because because you can't make a mitzvah without being aware, but because the tefillin require, there's another halachic requirement by tefillin, that you can't miss das from the tefillin, because of the kedusha of the tefillin, the holiness of the tefillin, yes. Why call so'ol avachol devash, lo saktim menu ish lo Hashem? Why you shouldn't use cake? Why you shouldn't use devash in kabbalas? Right. So you can find a reason for that. Ram says the reason is because the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, the idolaters, used to give their gods cakes, with tasty cakes. So they thought the gods are benefiting from their cakes. So the Torah specifically asked for the idea of anything sweet, any kind of honey, to show that this is not, we don't benefit God through the Kabbalists. Okay? Yes, you can find a lot of details you can find reasons for. But I'm telling you, you can't find reason for every detail. It's impossible because there's another consideration that's going alongside them to say that these two do not go hand in hand. They're separate considerations. Like I told you, like mitzvah Saint Shilas Kavana. Can you philosophize that? Or should somebody philosophize that? Show me a reason why a person doesn't know what he's doing, he has a mitzvah. You explain to me a reason for that. It's impossible. Unless you're crazy, I mean, it's impossible. What benefit did the guy have? He didn't even know what he's doing. He's in the kind of mitzvah. Does it make any sense? Impossible. Okay. The role philosophy plays, as I said, the role philosophy plays is that there are in the points of contact between philosophy and between Allah. There are points of contact. But there's reasons generic reasons for the halacha, but not specifics. Kiyum HaMitzvah is a separate, it's a separate system, it's a separate something given to us by God. This, it's a different science and a different knowledge. And God has told us that our commitment to this system is the way to perfection. That you could philosophize.
That you could show how it is. But the system of Allah itself is something which could never be man-made, because it's a commitment to a system of Chachma, living according to a certain system of Chachma, and part of the system of Chachma is its infinite depth and a commitment to try to ponder and understand it as far as we can. Now, any man-made system cannot be greater than the intellect that created it. And it cannot have infinite wisdom. So other people who are just as wise as the originator would immediately see its limitations. Unfortunately, the rest of the world today does not have any idea of what Allah is, and what they try to do is immediately to associate to some kind of notion that they're familiar with. Their ideas, of course, have to be wrong, because they have nothing to do with the concept of Allah, of which they have no real knowledge, since it is a unique system.
Person's commitment to the science of halacha perfects him, perfects his midos, perfects his mind, and perfects his life, and makes him zochel l'chayei olam haba. And the Rambam brings down the halachic system and the perfection that it bestows upon people, he mentions women. Am I right? Rambam says it's in Perek in Yisodei Torah, the last halacha in Perek Dalet. He talks about halacha. He says halacha efsha sheyedo im akol katan v'gadol ish v'isha bal lev rochev v'bal lev katzer, that the halacha is for everybody. Everybody can have knowledge of halacha. He mentions isha openly. So to say that an isha, a woman, is removed from halacha, is the Ram held away, is completely against the Ram himself. Okay. The last point I want to mention is, and this is a subject that's a touchy subject, and that has to do with the mitzvah of mechias amalek. So everybody says, I mean, there's a problem. How can we, what? Barbaric. Okay. Right. Genocide. Yes, that's right. Right. Okay. It's a famous medrash. The medrash is where Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu took the crown from the head of Pharaoh and put it on his own head. So Bilam was there. So he says, yeah. So Bilam told him that he should be careful, because this child is a Jew, and he's Mialdei Oivrim, and he did this out of Chachma. And what he meant to do symbolically was to take away the crown of Egypt. And so like this. He says, and he goes back through the whole history of Klal Yisrael. He said, you see, Avram himself was interested in power. And then you see he was a liar, because he said that his wife was a sister, you know, in order to bring a machsha, in order to fool, cause bring a stumbling block to the Egyptians. Yitzchak also did this in Gror. And he says, and Yaakov went in the same way through trickery. You see that he took the Bechorah from his brother. And then he went to Paddan Aram, to Lavan, and he was able to, and he fooled him, he left him with nothing, he took away his daughters and his sheep and everything, and the brothers sold Yosef, and they went down to Mitzrayim, and he went down to Mitzrayim, and then he was put in jail there, and then afterwards when they took him out of jail, when he interpreted the Paro's dream, so immediately he brought his father and his brothers, and he gave them money without me, he didn't charge them anything. And he says, so you see, these are the kind of people that you're dealing with. Yeah. So what did he do? He took the facts of the Torah, and projected onto them base motivation. Okay? That's what he did. That's what Bilam did. He was an intelligent fellow, so that's what he did. So actions which seem to be, on the surface, say that Yaakov was crooked because of trickery. He took away his father, and he took away the Bechara. Yeah. An event can only be determined by the underlying motive and perfection of the individual. And you can take an event which was really done out of perfection, and you can project onto it an evil motive and say it was evil. Okay? The important thing, the essence of an event lies in the underlying motivation and the concept, the motif of the event, of the whether it's a command, whether it's a mitzvah, whatever. The idea of Mechias HaMoed, which is the idea of, same idea of sinah, of hatred. Mitzvah to have hatred. Okay? Mitzvah to have hatred towards a person that's a destroyer, like the reason you say V'lam al-shinim al-tisikva and shmon esrei, V'chol aminim kirege yovedu, V'chol eve amcho mehera yikoresu, V'azedemere sa'aker, sa'shaber, sa'magev, sa'achniyem, b'mehera v'yameinu. That same kind of a bracha wouldn't be appealing either to the people who are asking a question about Mechias HaMoed. The reason is because they immediately, the moment they see hatred, they identify it with their own base emotion of hatred, and they say, that's what Yadus is proposing. That's what Yadus is proposing. In fact, Yadus doesn't propose anything of the sort. What Yadus is saying is that a person that has an Avas HaBrios, a person that has Avas Hashem, an Avas HaBrios, must ipso facto have a hatred towards anything that destroys the brios, that destroys Klal Yisrael. Okay? It's not a hatred against the individual. It's not a personal hatred. Nothing to do, I don't know the person, I've never met them, but the malshinim that I'm being mispalal about, and the minim that I'm being mispalal about, that they should be destroyed, I don't know them personally. It's just an avas abrios demands that you must have a hatred towards something which is a destroying factor. Destroying factor. It's a philosophical kind of hatred. It's a different concept altogether. That's what it's based on. Most people can't understand such a concept because they're rooted in the personal. They can't go above the personal, so they don't understand what that means. But Yadus demands that a person be on the level that he recognize that you must have a sinner. When you see people teaching ideas to other people that are completely false about Yadus, for no other reason than the fact that personally it's to their advantage, you have to have a hatred towards such a practice, towards a practice which destroys people's lives and takes them away from the truth.
Just like a person would have to hate a physician who practiced medicine, although he didn't have the knowledge of medicine, and was therefore destroying people's lives physically. Amalek is not just the enemy of the Jew. Amalek is the enemy of the entire world. A person must have a philosophical hatred towards any human being that destroys others. It's not a personal hatred. That's what Sinas Amalek is.
Okay? The problem is that people don't really have the conviction. They don't really have the conviction of Torah Misina. Because the idea of being fair towards people that have false ideas is only possible if you say, my idea is no better than his idea. His idea is no better than mine. Why? Because we both don't know what we're talking about. So I simply happen to like this idea. He likes that idea. Then you can speak about equality. But you can't speak about any kind of equality if one idea is true and the other one isn't. You can't
speak of equality, for instance, between treating a person with medicine or treating a person through witchcraft or through methods of the ancient medicine men.
Well, you can't say they deserve equal respect. One is destroying people and one is saving people. So the only reason why people are upset and they think it's unfair how we treat those who want to destroy Yadus is because they themselves don't really understand what Yadus is, and they don't understand that there's veracity of Yadus. So the concept of Mechias HaMoed is based upon, the concept of Mechias HaMoed is a philosophical hatred towards any people, any nation that wishes for no other reason than to destroy Klal Yisrael, you see, to cause people to have false ideas about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, about God. That anyone that has Avas Hashem and Avas Abrius has to hate such people, such a nation. That was the nation of the Nazis in Achshemam. And the Torah says that such a nation must be utterly destroyed. Now, again, we come to the point where I could give you the philosophy of the underlying mitzvah. Philosophy underlying mitzvah. You'll ask me, but what about the innocent children? I'm not going to hide the question. What about the innocent children? Okay. I'd say like this. I say to understand that is not a simple matter. Not a simple matter. Because, you see, somebody greater than us didn't understand it. That was Shaul. But Shaul HaMelech allowed the Taf to survive. Allowed the Taf to survive because he said, in the Behemoth, he said, Behemoth Machato, Taf Machato. Okay? So he was puzzled with the problem. But God nevertheless gave us the halacha, not the way Shaul thought. Not the way Shaul thought. And to say we're not committed to that halacha is merely falsehood. To say we might not understand it, a person could say he doesn't understand it.
But he cannot act in accordance with his lack of understanding. Only in accordance with the halacha.
There's one thing we can't say. I would say this. That apparently what the Torah holds, apparently what God holds is that it is not that he, not the destruction of the children that he wants. What he wants, because the Gemara says on the contrary, so God doesn't want to destroy people. But it would seem that the eradication of the, in order to eradicate the idea of a Amalek, this is necessary. That's all I can say.
In order to destroy the philosophy of a Amalek, it's necessary to destroy the entire nation.
It doesn't mean Yimach Shemam that you won't know their names, because I mean, you're getting silly questions. I mean, you do know them because you remember. It doesn't mean it. It means that the idea, the philosophy, should be completely wiped out. This is necessary. And since this is necessary, it takes precedence over our emotional inclinations. I would just say the following. And that's the same reason, by the way, by the Shev Omos, that they were... Yeah, okay. Same reason Shev Omos. Because of the fact of Avodah Zarah. It's the eradication of Avodah Zarah. If somebody will argue and will say no, that they don't agree that it's necessary to do this in order to eradicate the idea, I say they're wrong. They're wrong. God knows better. God knows that it has to be done. Eraya L'davar, you'll see today, in Germany, there is a new movement. The movement is the children of the Nazis. The children of the Nazis say, our parents could not have been such killers as they're being depicted in history. So it must be that this is completely a Jewish conspiracy to condemn our parents. And they're saying our parents were really virtuous people. And now they're bringing, what they're doing is they're bringing back Nazism with a denial of reality of the atrocities that were committed by Nazism, which is the most dangerous kind of Nazism. So I would simply cite that event, what is occurring right now, as a raya to the concept of Mechias Amalek that the Torah prescribes.
We don't have the knowledge that Kadosh Baruch Hu used in creating the Torah, but this much we could say, that if a person goes against what the halacha is, it must have disastrous effects. And that's why it says that because Shaul didn't keep the Mitzvah Mechias Amalek, Haman was a result. That's what Chazal mean to say.
God knows what the prescription is. The reason we know, the reason is Mechias Amalek. It's not to harm people. It's to remove a force that is harming the whole world and all of humanity. And the force has to be removed. The particulars of how it has to be removed, only God can know the particulars. And we submit to his judgment. And that's why the mitzvah is... If the person would have to have the kind of mitzvah. The Rav said, I believe, in the name of his father, that it's only a halacha by an ummah. It's not a halacha by an individual, by an ummah, if I'm not mistaken. He has a piece of Torah in it. But that's a separate thing. It's a question of Torah. But what we have to understand is the idea of Mechias Amalek and the reason for Mechias Amalek. And the fact is that the only prescription that we accept is the prescription of the Torah and God's halacha. Even if it goes counter to our emotions, and even if it goes counter to the emotion of Rachmanis, which is the one emotion that the Torah really tries to encourage, encourages in a person, that a person should be a merachim, person should always be on the side of Rachmanis. It's a good meter, because on the whole it leads to virtuous actions. But nevertheless, sometimes we have to even go against the meter of Rachmanis. Okay. One more thing I would add to Mechias Amalek. There's one more thing I would add. It's not simply that we believe that when God says that this is the only formula necessary, that it's necessary for destroying the idea of Amalek, that we believe him and we follow, if we have the opportunity, that we follow the halacha. I'm saying more than that. I say we believe that that is the greatest chesed. The greatest chesed. Because there is no merachim like a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Our greatest rachmanis that we can imagine doesn't come near, doesn't even approach, has nothing to qualitatively differentiate it from the rachmanis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. His rachmanis is a different plane, a different nature, a different plane. So therefore what I say is this, that it is midas hadin on Amalek, but it behind that is the greatest midas harachamim. It's midas harachamim for the olam, for the world, for kol bo'e olam. And that's what it's based on. It's based on Midas Arachma. Okay.
So in conclusion, apologetics has no place in Yadus. Apologetics implies a defense of a system. But the system of Yadus requires no defense. We know that it's the word of God because of the proof of Torah Misina. Once a person knows that it's God's word, so whether he likes or dislikes what is stated in the Torah, can have no effect upon his actions or his beliefs. He can try to understand the Torah, but the Torah does not depend upon whether it meets with his approval or with appeals to his taste, or whether it doesn't appeal to his taste. Anyone who needs to take the ideas of the Torah and place them and put them in such a light that they were appealing to him, clearly is an individual who is not convinced that the Torah is Misina. So that's a separate problem. So he doesn't understand the basics of Torah Misina. We may not like the idea of Mamzer. Some people may find it not appealing, but the fact is it's a pasuk in the Torah, and it's the word of God, and there's nothing that a person can do about it. In other words, we have no frantic need to defend the Torah. Wherever you see a frantic need to defend the Torah, the implication is clear that those people are determining whether the Torah is true based upon whether it has appeal to them. The whole idea of God giving the Torah is renders such a type of decision making absurd, because once we know that God gave us the Torah, we know His wisdom is infinite. So to say that we are going to determine whether we will keep the Torah, whether the Torah is true, based upon our own likes and dislikes, is absurd. It's a denial of the fact that God gave the Torah. This point has to be clear. We can try to understand the Torah. That's fine. That a person is not only can do, but is enjoined to do. As a matter of fact, the question of inferior and superior beings is not even a rational question, because we have no right to determine or to dictate to the Creator what type of beings He should create. On the whole, it is an accepted fact that the malachim are higher than people. So can one say it's not fair that God created malachim, that they're higher than people? And among individuals, there are individuals with superior qualities and individuals with inferior qualities. This is clear from Pirkei Avos, from Shonin, that we don't say that everybody's equal. We don't maintain that way. There are certain qualities that people have, intellectual qualities, as well as certain predispositions that
are exist in certain individuals and not in others. They're inferior and superior people. And we have no right to dictate to God what his creatures should be. So if God did in fact create an inferior and superior, if he did create man in two branches, inferior and superior, it's not an irrational, illogical concept. We can't place any restrictions on God's creation. I'm not saying that this is so. I'm saying that the Torah says that this is not so. But I'm just saying from a rational standpoint, the question is not a logical question. It's not a rational question. It's not a logical question. It's merely a neurotic type question of modern day society, because modern day society is only concerned in the area of the personal. They can't get away from the personal. They're not really concerned in investigations that have little to do with their immediate personal good. At any rate, had the Torah said, or had God created man as superior or woman as superior, we would accept this as well. This is his wisdom, and we abide by this. To say otherwise is simply to deny God. So we have a right to investigate the Torah, but this must be done properly. This must be done without negating the Bali HaMasorah, Chazal, and we should not draw philosophical conclusions that would imply that Chazal were bigoted, or the Rambam, or the Tur, who says Shasani Kitsono is a Tzidik Adin, because this means the breaking of the entire system. That's why the Rambam says a Kof Batar is anyone who speaks against the Bali HaMasorah. Because once you speak against the Chazal, the Bali HaMasorah, the Rishonim, then in essence what you've done is your Kof Batar, you destroy the entire system, because the entire system depends on them. Nevertheless, I maintain that an investigation into the Torah itself clearly demonstrates that man and woman are different, and that each one has their own strong points, their own uniqueness, their own innate qualities, and we can't speak of them as being equal because they are different. They are two components of a whole, you might say. Zohar nekeva bro'am v'yikra shimam adam v'yom yibam.
Just an interesting Rambam. Rambam, in the end of Hayroyos, where it has the Kedimos, so it says that Chazal say a chacham is kodem l'melech, that a chacham comes before the melech. So the Rambam says in the Pirush Mishnah is da, ki ma she'amru zal a chacham kodem l'melech, l'melech l'kayin gadol l'navi, hu b'tanayim rabim. There are many conditions, but it says like this. It says, hu shetam kedima sa chacham l'melech, eino ela b'machshava b'vad. It's only b'machshava, he says. That the benefit for the chacham, of the chacham, for the nation, is greater than the benefit of the king. But in practicality, you can't show any kind of preference to another individual over the king. So you see from the Rambam that there's a kind of kedima, a priority, a system of priorities that's only the machshava b'vad. It's only idealistic. So there's the practical, and then there's the idealistic. The one that has the most kedima is the chacham, the person that has the knowledge. That's in reality the one that has the greatest preference, who comes first, the greatest priority. But in terms of practicality, there are other considerations. Halacha has other considerations. Okay.